Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred gets it wrong again. Welcome into another edition of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. And if you missed it last night, there were some fireworks in an early season Major League Baseball game as the Houston Astros and the Los Angeles Dodgers shared the field for the first time since the cheating scandal broke over the past offseason. These two teams were not scheduled to play this year until baseball had to alter the 162-game season down to 60. And now the two go toe-to-toe last night. There had to be fireworks, right? There's no way this game could have gone off without any sort of emotions or any sort of spill out from the dugouts. Through five innings, it was a pretty calm game. And then the Dodgers take a 5-2 lead and enter relief pitcher Joe Kelly. And there was a series of events that went down if you missed it. There was much more than just Kelly throwing at Alex Bregman. Kelly comes in and quick out. Jose Altuve pops out. There's one out. Alex Bregman then steps to the plate. And Joe Kelly falls behind 3-0 on pitches. Throws high. Nearly hit Alex Bregman in the head. Bregman ducks. He's very unhappy. He takes first base. Then steps up Michael Brantley for the Astros. And like Joe Kelly, Michael Brantley was not part of that 2017 World Series squad. Brantley hits a little dribbler to first baseman Max Muncy. Joe Kelly runs over to first base. Muncy tosses the ball to Kelly. His foot is in front of the bag. It makes contact with Brantley. The two stare each other down. And Astros manager Dusty Baker has some choice words for Joe Kelly as he slowly walks back to the pitcher's mound. Two outs. Now, Yuri Gurriel steps to the plate. And this is where things really get interesting because Kelly's control seems completely off. Kelly walks Gurriel on four pitches, none of which were intentional. Gurriel takes offense to it, tosses his bat, removes his padding, walks down to first base. Everything's calm. And then stepping to the plate is Carlos Correa, who had a great night for the Astros. Kelly throws a breaking ball. It goes over the head of Correa. He took offense to it, steps out, takes his batting helmet off. Things are starting to get a little hectic. And then with a 2-2 count, Correa nearly with a game-changing hit down the left field line. And then he strikes out on the ensuing pitch, 88-mile-an-hour curveball. Joe Kelly has some words for Correa. Things get heated. That's what went down if you missed it last night. Joe Kelly today receives an 8-game suspension for throwing at members of the Houston Astros. 8-game suspension. And Dodgers manager Dave Roberts gets a 1-game suspension. Now, if you watched this game last night, you could say Kelly gets an 8-game suspension because he threw high not only at Alex Bregman, but also at Carlos Correa. I get it. There are unwritten rules in baseball. If you're going to plunk someone, you never go high. Baseball's stupid with the unwritten rules. Don't get me wrong. They're stupid. But the reason why Rob Manfred misses so badly with this 8-game suspension is because Joe Kelly is now suspended 8 times longer than any Astros player that was involved in the cheating scandal. And that is a problem. Remember the conversation that we had on the show yesterday? Baseball polices itself. Had Manfred properly handled the punishment that should have been given to the Astros outside of going after manager A.J. Hinch, outside of going after Carlos Beltran and Jeff Luhnow, this would not be happening. We saw this in an exhibition game with the Astros and the Royals not long ago. pitchers of opposing teams are intentionally going to throw at the Houston Astros. What Rob Manfred did today was he made an example out of Joe Kelly. I get it. But again, it's missing the point because this is all at the fault of Major League Baseball. This huge investigation that kept us on the edge of our seats, remember throughout the offseason, what's going to happen? Is Cora going to get a lifetime suspension? What's going to happen? They sweep the Boston Red Sox story under the rug. They fine the Houston Astros $5 million, strip a couple of draft picks, and a suspension to Jeff Luhnow, and a suspension to A.J. Hinch, and that's it. No players were affected by it. Rob Manfred has once again proven that he is a horrible leader and the worst commissioner in all of professional sports here in the country right now. Tonight, these two teams play again. It's the final time that they'll play for quite some time. They get two more at Dodger Stadium later on. But I believe that Joe Kelly will win his appeal. I believe the 8-game suspension was handed down simply to make sure there are no antics tonight. And maybe this is saving for a lot of players. Because who's to say that the Houston Astros don't come out right out of the gate and throw one at Mookie Betts? Who's to say that doesn't happen? By giving Joe Kelly an 8-game suspension, you know he's going to appeal it. And tonight, something by the name of Christian Javier is on the mound for the Houston Astros. No disrespect to Javier, but that's not exactly Lance McCullers. It's not exactly Justin Verlander. You can afford a couple of games suspension from Javier, right? Maybe this prevents anything from really crazy going down tonight. Maybe that's the point of giving him the 8-game suspension with the intent to let him win the appeal. I don't know. But that is, again, in comparison to a 162-game season, Joe Kelly would have received a 22-game suspension today. Rob Manfred has a problem on his hands, and it's the way he handles these types of situations inside Major League Baseball. We'll talk more about this later on in the show. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it because there are other topics floating around the big leagues, like how fun the San Diego Padres are to watch. Now, they beat the San Francisco Giants last night, and I tell you, I'm having a great time watching this Padres team. I also want to talk about the current situation with the Miami Marlins. Another player has tested positive for COVID-19. That means 18 players have tested positive. Hasn't been confirmed, but the rumors are that Marlins players violated rules, went out to a nightclub, and that's how this started to spread throughout the team clubhouse. We'll talk all about that a little bit later on in the show. Speaking of Major League Baseball, let's take a look at the scoreboard. We have some day games going on. Right now, the Arizona Diamondbacks trailing the Texas Rangers 2-0. This one going into the seventh inning. Also, the Colorado Rockies, who have played great baseball up to this point in time, with a 3-1 lead over the Oakland A's. Colorado recovering from an early deficit. Oakland managed to strike first as Matt Chapman launched a ringer all the way to center field. Since then, it's been a 3-0 run for the Colorado Rockies. So that's a look at the two-day baseball games that we have going on. As I mentioned, plenty of evening baseball to get into as well, and a couple of really interesting matchups outside of the Dodgers and the Astros, which will begin at 5 o'clock. So it's getting ready to roll here in just a bit. We also get Max Scherzer returning to the mound for the world champion Nationals, who need a win. They're sitting at 1-4 on the season. That game getting ready to start as we speak. The White Sox will travel to beat the Indians. We get the Cubs and the Reds as well. All of those games in the 4 o'clock hour. Dodgers-Astros at 5. Brewers will take on the Pirates at 5:05. Tampa Bay will travel to meet the Atlanta Braves. We get Detroit and Kansas City. Boston on the road to take on the Mets. The Yankees battle it up with the Baltimore Orioles. Garrett Cole will make his second start in a Yankees uniform. 6:10 tonight, we get St. Louis and Minnesota. San Diego at San Francisco once again. Johnny Cueto, fresh off of a pretty solid performance against the Dodgers to open up the season, he'll return for the Giants tonight. Then we get Seattle and the Angels at 8 p.m. That game is on national TV on ESPN. Two postponed games. Philly was supposed to be taking on the Yankees. Of course, Philly not in action due to the COVID scare with the Miami Marlins in Miami and Baltimore. That game's not happening. Instead, the Baltimore Orioles taking on the New York Yankees. Some news coming out of college football. The ACC has revamped their schedule, joining the Pac-12 and the Big Ten for an ACC conference schedule season only. And that 11-game schedule does include Notre Dame. There was the topic of discussion, what's going to happen with two of the high-profile independents, Notre Dame and BYU. Unlike Notre Dame, BYU does not have conference affiliation with any conference. Notre Dame had a six-game contract with the ACC, and now Notre Dame will join the ACC for this year only. They will be eligible to participate for the ACC championship game. There will be no divisions within the ACC, just a flat-out 11-game schedule. And this will play out over the course of 13 weeks with two built-in bye weeks. The ACC championship game is now scheduled to be played in Charlotte on either December 12th or December 19th, and it will feature the top two teams with the highest conference winning percentages. Now, this does change some things. Notre Dame had a couple of non-conference games that were scheduled to move on as normal. One of those games was against Navy. That game will have to be canceled under this new format. How does it work out with TV revenue, and how does the ACC benefit by adding Notre Dame? Simple. Notre Dame is one of the only schools, they have their own national TV contract. That's why they have never gone to a conference. They don't have to revenue share with anyone. The ACC will pick up Notre Dame, and the money that they bring in from that NBC contract will be distributed equally by all 15 schools in the ACC. So it's a win for Notre Dame. They don't have to worry about fielding a schedule. In the same token, the ACC is going to get a little bit of that independent love that Notre Dame receives in the form of TV contracts. Now, the new scheduling arrangement has not officially been announced, but at least some movement on the college football front. That makes three of the Power Five conferences making arrangements for the conference-only schedule. We've got a break for just a moment. We are going to be joined next segment by former Major League pitcher Bill Lasky. We'll talk all things Major League Baseball. We'll also give you the local sports recap in just a moment. It's a Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports, and we are live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Time for some more baseball talk here on Drive Time Sports. I'm loving it tonight. West Coast baseball, one of my favorite things. I've said that a million times here on the show. It's just nice when you have something to watch at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. We had plenty of baseball last night. Very interesting series between the Padres and the Giants. I'll tell you, this Padres team is very fun to watch. We're going to talk about that. We'll talk about the Dodgers and the Astros as well. There was a little drama last night in Houston. And we'll talk about everything else that's happening in the big leagues right now with our guest, Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, and now handling pre- and post-game shows for the San Francisco Giants. Bill, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate the time again. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem whatsoever. I think the fans of your radio station as well as the fans of Major League Baseball are starting to see baseball again, and it was fun over the weekend, especially with the opening games last Thursday, even though Washington was rained out. It was good drama, good baseball, and of course the Giants losing last night against the Padres. They split with the Dodgers 2-2 over the weekend. But a lot of interesting things happen in the NL West, and I cover the NL West pretty well. Some good baseball, and there is going to be some good baseball coming out of the NL West all year because these teams are evenly matched.
Yeah, and really, I'm still not sold on the Rockies, but when I look at the records right now and the Dodgers being in third place, I think it'll play itself out. But one team at the top of the NL West is the San Diego Padres, and you got a chance to watch this team, I know, up close last night, Bill. This is an exciting squad, and I was really curious to see how long it would take them to find themselves. You know, are they still a year or two away, or are they ready at this particular time? And last night, they had a solid outing from Zach Davies. Tatis has played very well. Machado hasn't hit the ball well, but they're still winning. I mean, their prized player is hitting .167 over five games, and they're 4-1. The free agent deal with Tommy Pham looks fantastic at this stage in the game. He's a threat when he's on the base pads. He hasn't even particularly hit the ball well. And it's just proof that this team hasn't hit their stride yet offensively. Still, they're pretty wild and fun to watch.
They sure are, and that lineup, 1-9, is a tough lineup. Will Myers, another one in this lineup, he hit the ball way out of the ballpark last night. He looks like he's got his swing back from years ago. Different kind of look on him. Tatis Jr. has just got so much power leading off, and he's just a young, energized player that really is going to be captivating in MLB as the years go on. Like you said, Machado has just been, he hasn't been himself yet. But this team's growing on me. This team with Hosmer and some of the other veterans as you threw, Pham is another one. This lineup's for real. They're playing very good baseball, and pitching staff's holding their own. Tonight, Johnny Cueto's going to see if he can carve them up. But at the same time, the Padres being 4-1, this is a team to be reckoned with, and I think they can compete against the Dodgers in the NL West.
Yeah, a couple of things that really stand out to me when you look at the Padres, it has to be their bullpen, right? And I wondered what they would do as far as Kirby Yates, who's been just a lights-out closer over the last couple of years. But one of the things that stands out to me, we got to see Drew Pomeranz come on late last night. This is a team that has two legit closers, because we know what Kirby Yates is capable of doing, and if Pomeranz can come out and shut down opposing teams in the ninth, 1-2-3, this team is going to be deadly with a lead. That's what stands out to me, Bill.
No doubt about it. I got to see Pomeranz pitch last year because he started with the Giants, and he's got that quick fastball. Plus, he's a big dude. He's probably 6'5", 6'6", throwing right over the top of the little breaking ball. But he's bringing it 95-plus. They gave him a 3-year contract, big money. As you know, the Giants traded him to Milwaukee, and then he pitched a little bit with Milwaukee. But there, no doubt the Padres saw something in him as a left-hand closer, and as you just talked about, Yates and him in the bullpen is a duo that's going to be complemented to each other. Yesterday, I thought he threw the ball real well. He came in and just dominated three hitters. Got Pence on a breaking ball after he threw two of them by him, and Pence never even saw the breaking ball. So he has a complement in there, and I think that's what the Padres need. They need those closers at the end. And for years, that's when their biggest problems were, was when they went to the bullpen. So we'll see if this gets better as the games progress. And we're going to see some showdowns here with the Padres and the Dodgers soon.
Now, let's talk about the Dodgers. Last night, they get the Houston Astros. I think it's one of those really anticipated series, knowing that you get to go up against the AL West. Those two teams were not originally scheduled to play each other until they went down to the 60-game season. And honestly, you know there's going to be some sort of drama in some capacity with everything that happened with the Astros during this past offseason. And as you and I have talked about, the game of baseball typically polices itself. I'm of the mindset that Rob Manfred did a terrible job in this investigation with the Astros. It was basically a slap on the wrist. Sure, A.J. Hinch lost his job, but outside of that, $5 million to cheat your way to a World Series, you take that 10 out of 10 times if you're a baseball team just based on the revenue you were producing. Now, with that being said, we have seen a lot of chin music. We nearly saw it last night. Joe Kelly and the Dodgers up 3 runs. Kelly has a 3-0 count to Alex Bregman, and he tried to put one, I'm going to say, in the ribs. Bregman ducks, so it looks like it was going for the head, but really he ducks 2 feet. Nonetheless, Bill, it sets up some fireworks, and anyone who's anyone could have expected this.
No doubt, and we're going to see more of this. This isn't just going to be a one-type deal with the Dodgers and the Astros. Wait till the Astros start playing some AL West teams. Oakland A's being one, they've already said this is going to brew braha, and I think it's going to. It's not just going to go away. The cheating scandal the Astros did, Major League Baseball and all the players know it, and they're going to police it. Yesterday, I don't like headhunting. That's one thing I will never teach or talk about. If you're going to hit somebody, hit them in the butt, hit them in the leg, and make your point that way. But on a 3-0 pitch going over his head, behind his head, that's uncalled for. I just don't like when you try to injure a player above the neck, and that's one thing you could injure a player for life. Kelly got away with it, and then he strikes out Correa, and they do a little chirping, and the bench is clear. Again, no punches, just throwing a lot of verbal abuse, and it's not going to go away. I mean, the Astros are going to do something, and they'll retaliate. So this Dodger-Astro series just starting, and they got another one tonight, so it's going to be interesting to see how this translates. But, you know, this Astro team, Dusty Baker's a very good friend of mine, got an extension the other day, which I think is good for him because he is a great motivator in anybody's locker room. And he's going to have to really control the waters over there because it is going to be a lot of bench clearing, and it is going to be some brawling because the Astro players – think it's just going to go away. It's not, and it's going to get worse as this 60 game season progresses.
And Bill, I've always had the utmost respect for Dusty Baker, and I know you and I had this conversation back this past summer. There's no possible way that the Astros could have found a better manager to at least, I guess, produce level heads, right? To not only back his players, but in the same token say, look, this is something that's going to be the norm. I don't know that you could have found a better manager for what the Astros are going to face this season.
I agree with you. Dusty's that kind of mild manager. He gets fired up. You heard him pop off a couple times yesterday in some of the highlights. That was him popping off from the bench. He gets fired up. He's that type of manager that gets your team fired up too, and he still thinks he can play, no doubt. But he's the type of manager that is going to calm the waters. He is going to take every precaution for brawls and injuries. And look at what he's got already. He's got Verlander already on his shelf, and they picked up Fernando Rodney now. So they're looking to advance with some veteran pitchers too. So, you know, I think it's a good move that Dusty is over there. I think it will translate into some better games and better flexibility with that team. And I think you and I both know he's a competitor and he's a winner.
Again, Bill Lasky, our guest right now, as we talk Major League Baseball and everything that is happening with it. Bill, we have to talk about the current situation with the Miami Marlins, because now the schedule has already been altered. We have no idea what it's going to look like for the Marlins. Reports come out today that another player has tested positive for COVID-19, bringing the total number of cases in their traveling party to 18. So we have all the postponed baseball going through Sunday. I don't know if this means there's going to be more postponed baseball through next week. I would believe there would be for this Marlins team. It's obviously affected the Philadelphia Phillies. And basically my take on this, and I'm curious as to if you agree or disagree, but it all goes back to the plan that was put in place for this season. It seemed erratic. It seemed rushed. It seemed thrown together. And in comparison to Bettman in hockey and Adam Silver in basketball, to me, this is a direct correlation to the lack of leadership from Commissioner Rob Manfred. Yes, I believe that he should shoulder most of the blame for what's happened in Miami. Am I right or wrong?
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you 100% when you're looking at hockey being zero basketballs down. And, you know, they're doing the right thing in keeping these people quarantined. Now, it's about every individual team and how they're controlling this. When you look at all the reports of all the COVID testing, Miami's the only one that literally looks like they broke the rules. They either went out or they went on the streets of Philadelphia and it transferred into everybody getting COVID. Even the Philadelphia Philly clubhouse guy, one of the clubhouse guys that were in there caught it and is positive. So I think that the circle of doubt is going to be on Don Mattingly and how he's protecting his team. When you're looking at 17, 18 people, that is a huge amount of players on a 30-man team plus coaches. So they're going to have to put a circle around this team and really kind of put them in bed and not let them get out. And if they have to quarantine them in each hotel when they move to different cities as well as when they go home, they're going to have to do something to shut these kids down, because I think it's the young generation that's just going out thinking they're not going to catch it. And now they have. It's an eye awakener. And as you said, I think it goes back to Major League Baseball and the commissioner, as well as the team support in controlling the virus. When you're looking at one team out of 30 teams that have tested so many, it's got to be the team and the correlation of what they're doing to keep these players intact and protected. And I don't think they're doing it.
And it seems as if there's no, I mean, the owners are moving full head of steam. We are not going to stop this baseball season at all. So, Bill, I got to ask you this. If this was a team of more prominence, if it was the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Astros, a team that we view as a legitimate World Series contender, would baseball's actions be any different than what we've seen from the actions now that we know it's the Marlins?
I wonder about that too, because as you know, the Marlins went into Philadelphia, took two out of three. They played two great games in being a contender with the Phillies. So there is a lot of youth on that team. There's a lot of young guys on that team. And I just question that too, if this was a major team in one of the major markets, if things would have changed. But I really believe that these teams that are really quarantining their players, it's working. you know, when you look at all these teams that travel, the Giants just traveled to L.A., which is a hotbed of COVID, and everything was fine. All the tests are negative. So I really believe it's up to the team and the management and how they control these players in and out of the hotel when it's their off time. And if they can teach these kids that they can't go out and they have to protect themselves, then baseball can move forward. But if players just move out and they try to think that they're going to be anti-COVID, this is going to spread, and it's going to spread not just with that team, but as what they said, the Philadelphia Phillies were quarantined, and they all tested negative. But I really go back to the testing. This testing can't be 72 hours. They got to figure a way it's 24 hours or less to make sure that these teams are quarantined and no COVID-19 is out there, because you don't want to quarantine both teams just like they did with Philly. So there has to be a protection of your own players, your own organization, and there's billions of dollars to do that, and baseball has to get out and get this testing done quicker and sooner, and it'll be better.
Bill, let's end with this. We'll talk about the World Series champion Washington Nationals. They've gotten off to a very sluggish start, 1-4. Last year, Dave Martinez's squad was 19-31. Did not get off to the best of starts. There was talk of Martinez may even lose his job. They turn it around, they win the World Series. Trey Turner, who is one of the top leadoff mans in the National League, says, yeah, it's a little bit alarming because there's a 60-game season. When you look at the Nationals being at 1-4, and the fact that Juan Soto hasn't played a game yet, the fact that the one start we saw, Max Scherzer, he looked good at times, but he looked bad at times, really inconsistent. What should be the level of concern for a 1-4 start in a 60-game season?
I think you hit it right on the head. Soto coming back is going to be a big plus. Strasburg hasn't pitched yet. Their main guns haven't played, but we talked about this every week. You can't get out 1-4, 1-8, 1-10 because you don't have that many games to make up, and you're playing your division, plus you're playing again against the AL division. Now, of course, Washington's got an easier run in the AL there, but at the same time, you got to play better baseball. They're not playing better baseball. Dave Martinez coming out being scared because he's got heart issues. That has to frail that club a little bit. That's my manager, and he's worried about catching COVID-19. So let's just see how this plays out. You know, every team right now seems like they're 500 or just below 500, and everything's just starting to take off. So these players are starting to get a little routine going. They got a little rhythm going. And each week to week, we're going to find out who's running the camp and who's going to be in first place and who's going to start being in the cellar dweller. So it is going to take place soon because a lot of these teams are going to start being battle head to head in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, and I guess in Washington's case, with the extended playoffs, which I'm not a fan of, and I know you're not a fan of, but with the extended playoffs, it does give you a little bit more leeway, right, to start off slow now that about 53% of the teams are going to go to the postseason.
Yeah, I don't like the playoffs. There's too many games, too many teams. Eliminate some of this and maybe the first top two teams, but now you're looking at a third team in divisions. And it's just too many teams, too many games at the end. Sure, it's a 60-game season, but you want the top teams to play, and you know, a 2 out of 3 here and there, that doesn't work for me. I'd rather see 5 games or 7 games. That's really the true test of your champions. We'll see how it all plays out. You know, we haven't even talked about the 10th inning with runners on second base.
Yeah,
so those
right.
are all discussions we can have.
I forgot all about that. Bizarre, isn't it?
It just shakes my head when I see it. And, you know, it's just different baseball. And this whole season is going to be different with no fans in the stands. So all we can do is keep watching. It's live baseball, and I know you and I are enjoying it, and I know the fans are. And all we can do is hopefully this continues and the COVID kind of slows down and no baseball is postponed and the season continues with some great drama in baseball as well as good baseball. And I think that's part of what we've seen so far this weekend.
Bill Lasky, our guest, he joins us each week. Bill, perfect opportunity for you to let the listeners know where they can find you. And also, as we've talked about the last couple of weeks, your business venture online.
Yeah, BigLeagueCoaching.pro. It's moving really well. A lot of people are loving the videos we produce. Go to BigLeagueCoaching.pro. Take a look at it. Six of us professional players, all big leaguers, have produced videos for teaching And it's just good baseball for parents, coaches, players. Take a peek at it. People are doing it. People are loving it. But also you can pick me up at Lasky19 on Twitter. And I'm tweeting out there as the season's going and enjoying baseball like you and your listeners are.
Now, Bill, it's always a pleasure to get you on. I appreciate the time. Great baseball talk. Thank you very much.
Excellent. We're looking forward to talking to you next week.
Let's take a quick commercial break. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. Again, we're live from the Auto Forum Studios right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
The Colorado Rockies moving to 4-1 on the season after taking care of business against the Oakland A's. It's impressive so far. I know it's early. There's 55 games to go in the season. But Rocky fans rarely have anything to get excited about, and they're doing it despite the fact that Nolan Arenado and Charlie Blackmon have not hit the ball well. Arenado batting .235 on the season, Charlie Blackmon .238. So it's not as if their power sluggers have gotten off to a brilliant start. In fact, the Rockies, I don't believe they have a single 300 hitter in the starting lineup. Pitching, they've been fantastic. Jermaine Marquez was great today against a team in Oakland that can flat out hit the baseball. Marquez goes six innings, gives up four hits, one earned run. And again, going back to what we just talked about moments ago with Bill Lasky, when you compare divisions, you know, NL East, AL East, NL West, AL West, it's fascinating baseball. It's good baseball. We got a lot of other interesting games that'll be popping up here relatively soon. Pay attention to the Rockies. Pay attention to the Padres. Everybody knows about the Dodgers. Tomorrow's the big day in the NBA. We finally get the return to basketball games that matter. I don't know if you paid attention to the scrimmage games or not. A lot of bad basketball. And I believe we're going to have to get a few games under our belt before it actually becomes compelling basketball. But we will have a shortened edition of Drive Time Sports tomorrow because the Utah Jazz and the New Orleans Pelicans will tip things off at 4:30 p.m. And then tomorrow night's the Clippers and the Lakers. And then we'll get basketball every other day as far as the Utah Jazz are concerned from that point on. And one of the things that we really haven't taken a look at, it's the Jazz schedule as we get set to restart. And I don't know how much time we're going to have on the show tomorrow. We'll only have about a 15 to 20 minute show. So let's look at this. The Jazz get the Pelicans tomorrow. Then they get the Thunder on Saturday, and that's another early start time. 1:30 start time on Saturday for the Jazz. Next Monday, they get the Lakers at 7 p.m. Wednesday, they get the Grizzlies. Early start time, 12:30 p.m. Friday, they get the Spurs at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 8th, 1:30 p.m. start time against the Nuggets. And then Monday, August 10th, 1 p.m. start time against the Mavericks. So not a lot of primetime games. And that's the fun thing about the NBA restart. It's going to have a college basketball type feel. You know, college basketball, the NCAA tournament where you have teams standing by, and when one game ends, the next team comes in. Things will be a little bit different because of the protocol they have to do as far as cleaning and sanitizing to prepare for the next game. But I love that we have one game after another, and just looking at the NBA schedule, after we get through tomorrow, because again, there's only two games tomorrow. Jazz, Pelicans, Lakers, Clippers. That's it. But let's look at Friday's schedule. Orlando and Brooklyn at 12:30. Memphis, Portland at 2. Phoenix, Washington at 2. Boston, Milwaukee, 4:30. Sacramento, San Antonio at 6. Houston, Dallas at 7. Saturday games start at 11 a.m. Sunday games start at noon. Monday, 11 a.m. Tuesday, 11 a.m. So we have day baseball. I'm a big fan of day baseball. I got to keep tabs on it all day throughout the workday. We're going to have to do that with basketball as well. That's a different dynamic. That's not something that we are used to in the least. Day basketball, night basketball, two gyms, one game coming one after another. NBA basketball will return tomorrow. David Locke, Ron Boone, they'll bring you the play-by-play call. Live coverage is going to begin at 4:20 right here on Drive Time Sports. Tip-off will follow at 4:30. We're going to break one more time. We'll come back. We'll put the final touches on this edition of the show. We'll talk some NBA basketball right after this.
Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. You listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
Final segment here on this Wednesday edition of the show. I'll bring in Travis Anderson to help me close out. And Travis, we'll preview tomorrow's game. Jazz Pelicans. I don't believe that the Pelicans are even remotely close to being a contender, but I do believe that they may be one of the most interesting teams in Orlando. One of the most interesting teams that doesn't necessarily have a chance to win it, but boy, there's a lot of storylines to watch when you look at this team. It's no easy task for Utah right out of the gate. This Pelicans team averages about 117 a ball game, and they have the newest, youngest sensation in Zion Williamson, who will be in uniform tomorrow night. On top of that, they have one of the most unique scorers in the game as well, in Brandon Ingram.
Stud and Lonzo Ball.
What's that?
Lonzo Ball's a stud.
Well, I'm
a lot of people, I know you and I are probably the only two that love this kid. A lot of people hate, but Lonzo Ball can play.
Yeah, look, the only reason people don't like Lonzo Ball is because of what his father put on his back right out of the gate. That's the only reason why.
Absolutely.
I mean, let's be real.
Guy's a baller.
The guy gets it done on both ends of the floor. And again, looking at the way the standings are shaping up, I mean, obviously you want to take care of business in your eight seeding games. And where the Jazz are sitting right now, just a game up on Oklahoma City, you got to remember, they're only three games back of the Clippers, and I believe the Clippers have some problems right now. And so each seeding game for the Jazz is going to be highly important. The one matchup they have to avoid at all costs, the Lakers. I believe the Jazz can make a fairly deep run in the playoffs if you can avoid that second-round matchup or even a first-round matchup with the Lakers. I don't think you have to worry about a first-round matchup because Utah is far enough ahead of, say, Memphis, nine games, so Utah can't fall to the eight seed. You only play eight games. But tomorrow's game is interesting on multiple levels, and I'm curious to see the style of basketball because scrimmage games did not produce great basketball.
It was horrible. The scrimmage games were horrible basketball to watch, so maybe as we get into these seeding games, you know, it's more important now playing for that seeding like we talked about, so hopefully the ball's better, but yeah, scrimmages stunk. So it's not easy for Utah out of the gate getting New Orleans, a team that likes to get up and down the floor, where Utah's more of a half-court team.
Yeah, so tomorrow, it's again, highly intriguing how Utah's going to get up and down the floor without Bojan Bogdanović. And I think for the Jazz, that's the biggest storyline. How do you score the ball without arguably your best player?
Mike Conley.
Yeah.
Conley's got to be the guy. And he's struggled in this system since he's, you know, since the start of the season, and I don't know if you're going to get anything out of him. I think what we've seen from Mike Conley in this Jazz system is what he's going to be, and it's just not going to be good enough for the Jazz.
Yeah, Bojan's averaging 20 a game, and you lose that. You look at Conley, he's averaging 13. Is it out of the realm of possible to say that Conley can average close to 20? No, it's not, but in my mind, it goes deeper than that. I believe you have to get something out of, say, Joe Ingles.
He hasn't played well at all.
No, he hasn't. He's averaging less than 10 a game.
And Boyan's the guy that spreads the floor. And he can create his own shot, or Conley can't do that. Conley's more of a drive, and then he's going to kick out. And Ingles has got to be that guy. When Conley drives to the bucket, he's in that corner, he's got to hit. Yeah, and he hasn't.
To me, he becomes one of the most important players on this team. Because with Bojan going down, you have to look. I mean, just looking at the analytics, right, and the player efficiency rates, Bojan's efficiency rate wasn't nearly as high as, say, Jordan Clarkson's, and Clarkson was averaging 15 a game off of the bench, and you pointed out that you felt he was their best player going into the stoppage. Fair argument there. With Bojan being gone, and Bojan taking, I don't even know how many shots Bojan was taking per game.
13, we'll say.
Okay, so you have more shots to distribute. This is a must for Joe Ingles offensively, because I don't believe for a moment that the Jazz can't slow teams down. I mean, this team can play defense, and you have one of the best defensive players in the game in Rudy Gobert. Can you score the basketball? That's the question for me with this Utah Jazz team, and I think it falls squarely on the shoulders of two players. I think we know what we're going to get out of Donovan Mitchell. I think you know what you're going to get out of Rudy on the offensive end. It has to fall on Mike Conley, and it has to fall on Joe Ingles. I think it's that simple.
I'm with you. Those two guys have got to pick up the slack. Like you said, we know that Mitchell's a volume scorer. He's going to get his. Rudy Gobert is going to clean up on the offensive side and play some great defense. But those two guys that you just talked about have to step up in Boyan's, you know, absence. And I just don't know if we're going to get that from them, because they haven't proved it throughout the season that they can do that.
All right. I'm not. You're not going to be on the air tomorrow because we have a shortened show. It's going to end at about 4:20. I want your prediction. Who wins the two games tomorrow night?
I'm going New Orleans, and I'm going Lakers because the Clippers have a lot of players not playing.
Yeah, the Clippers are they have some problems. We'll talk more NBA basketball on the show tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Enjoy more Major League Baseball coming up tonight. Be safe. We are out.